This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest is the author of Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. She's Catherine Jacobson Raymond. She's an investigative journalist who herself has suffered from back problems, has investigated and sometimes undergone virtually every modality in the book. Catherine, an interesting statistic in the book that you cite is that when polled, is it true that most spinal surgeons themselves wouldn't opt for back surgery or wouldn't recommend it to a loved one? That's an interesting statistic that you threw into the book.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I don't know if we could say that that would be true across the board. I suppose we might be able to. But at one large conference of spine surgeons, someone had the incredible nerve to poll the 100 surgeons in the room, and only one of them said that he would agree to have a spinal fusion. And I don't know who I'm sure the person who decided to conduct that poll was extremely popular after that. Yeah. It was at a meeting of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons in 2010, and 100 surgeons were polled, and the answer from all but one was absolutely not. The risk-reward ratio just was not good enough.
Indeed. So one of the popular alternatives to back surgery, and it's sometimes used for a different kind of problem, a very pervasive back problem, spinal stenosis, usually occurs in older individuals. They have difficulty walking, weakness in their legs, and it's due to spinal compression, and it's a really thorny problem. Treated often with back injections. Of course, back injections are often used for all manner of back pain. And you delve into that in the book and talk about the pros and cons of that procedure. What's up with that?
Well, you know, of course, I meet a great many people with spinal stenosis or have been told that they have spinal stenosis, and that is the cause of their pain and disability, and they're not always very old. I meet people in their 40s who are telling me about their spinal stenosis. And yes, it is caused by nerve compression. Essentially, the spine, the vertebrae, there's a ring and through which the spinal nerves pass. So imagine a column, and the spinal nerves are running down the interior of the column. And the spine understands its job really, really well. It is to prevent you from being dead, because if something happens to your spine, that's what you'll be, yes? So when the spine feels somewhat imbalanced or somewhat imperiled because your muscle development is not great and you're not doing a great job of holding yourself up, it begins to build bone. It begins to build a lot of bone, and the bone appears as needle-like teeth inside that column. So the needle-like teeth begin to compress the spinal nerves. This is much exacerbated in people who are deconditioned and who begin to assume a kind of a hunched over posture that is supposed to relieve their pain, but actually makes their spines feel even more imperiled. So they grow some more bone. Mm. And these needle-like teeth begin to make contact with the spinal nerves. And sort of this is it's a merry-go-round. You get on and you cannot get off unless you're able to reverse the situation by beginning to build up muscle and balance muscles and ligaments so that your spine begins to basically feel better about the whole situation.
I'm often confronted with callers on my, I do a call-in radio show on weekends, yes. And I'm often confronted with callers who have severe or claim to have been diagnosed with severe spinal stenosis. And it's very difficult for me to talk to these people because I feel that it's so fundamentally a problem of prevention, something that needs to be addressed early. And what I've proposed is that we, you know, just like we have physical education, we have driver education, we should have spinal education for our kids them really early on in a program to strengthen their spinal muscles, to have them address sitting, which is really a culprit here. They say sitting is the new smoking, not just from a cardiovascular standpoint, but also from the standpoint of weakening back muscles.
Right. Well, I don't want to get too far from the spinal stenosis injection question, but a very great interest of mine, which I intend to pursue, over the next several years, is what are we going to do about the fact that physical education has nearly disappeared in our schools? Kids are most frequently left to their own devices, which in this case happen to be electronic ones on the sofa, and they are failing very much to develop the kind of strength and musculature that we as children absolutely took for granted. I mean, we were kicked out the front door, and nobody really knew if we were climbing trees or climbing around on the new construction of a development.
Just make sure you're home before dark.
My mother doesn't
that was
know
about
that.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we did, right? And you came home for dinner. I have observed that many kids today do not do that. They do not want to climb trees. They do not want to swing on the monkey bars. They're kind of horrified by the whole idea of that, and that's a great danger. I think we're going to see many, many more people with back pain in this next generation, because not only they're not in a position where they've become deconditioned, they've never been in condition. It's somehow a basic human quality, which is, you know, these broad, strong muscles of the glutes and the back, they have never been developed at all. And that is going to be a problem. But to return to the question of the injections, one of the chapters that in Crooked is called Needle Jockeys. And it talks about how interventional pain physicians have made a very good living out of giving primarily epidural steroid injections, not exclusively, but for many of them, spinal injections are their bread and butter. And I've talked to many people who all have severe spinal stenosis. I have never yet run into anyone who has mild spinal stenosis, so you got to wonder about that. They're given multiple injections, usually in series of three, even if the first two do no good. Frequently, they get a little relief from the first one, the second one much less or none, and the third one none. And then a year later, they decide to try it again. Same outcomes. But what we've seen in clinical trials, in various studies, is that there is absolutely no evidence for the benefit of epidural steroid injections in spinal stenosis. Wow. The inherent use of an epidural steroid is to decrease the level of an inflammation of a nerve that has been impinged upon by a disc herniation. People who are people in their 50s and upward, their discs are so desiccated that they are very unlikely to experience a disc herniation. I mean, it does happen, but it's really rare. And for spinal stenosis, there is just no point in pumping corticosteroids in there. And there are a lot of downsides, which I discuss at length in the book. Among them, there was an understanding that somehow corticosteroids injected into the spine would not have the same effect on bone tissue, on brain tissue, on the heart, as other oral corticosteroids. But that is turning out to be completely untrue, and it made no sense in the first place, right?
Right, exactly.
So there you have older people who are receiving multiple injections in the course of a year. I did talk to someone the other day who said that he had had 18
Yikes.
Spinal injections in the last 5 years or so. And there is distinctly an impact on bone, especially one study coming out of Henry Ford Hospital, Michigan, showing a real diminishment of bone in the hip, You don't want that, especially not for something that does no good. Mm-hmm. There's also a story in the book of a person that I met in a cafe who was in a wheelchair, and we got chatting as often happens to me, and she asked me what I was doing, and I told her about the book, and she said, "Well," and pointed to the wheelchair, and I said, and she was under 60, about 60 maybe, and I said, "You know, I'm so sorry to hear that. Was it surgery?" And she said, "No, I had had an epidural spinal injection some years before, and my grandkids were coming, and I thought I would just like top it off, like getting Botox or something." And so I went ahead and I went to the pain doctor, and I was on the table, and he gave me the injection. And while he was giving it to me, I found that I had a terrible pain, became incontinent. When I got off the table, my legs would no longer work. Mm. And she's paralyzed. Her legs do not hold her. She cannot walk. And she's in the middle of a big legal case, which she probably will lose because she signed a release, as most of us do, all of us, before we have those injections.
She, in effect, had a stroke of the spinal cord, you know, probably.
Exactly.
Where there was some loss of blood circulation and the tissue died.
It's not unusual. Well, it may not have been quite that, but it's not unusual for the needle to penetrate the dura, which is a thick casing on the outside of the spinal nerves. And if that happens, then the payload from the injection is going right into the central nervous system and straight to the brain. Mm. And that when that happens, there can be tremendous damage. It seems to be rare. I mean, we would hear about it if people were paralyzed right and left. But what I learned from working with this particular woman was that for her to bring her lawsuit, her malpractice lawsuit, she had to sign off on any publicity that would affect the physician who did it. That was the only way this attorney would take her on, because he had a nice little thing going with a hospital and its physicians. So we might not hear about it. That might be entirely covered up. But, of course, I ran into her, so that's how I knew.
So on that sad note, let's pause for just a moment to hear from one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Okay, folks, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our Intelligent Medicine sponsors. Back to our discussion of Crooked with our guest, Catherine Jacobson Raymond, outwitting the back pain industry and getting on the road to recovery. You know, while we discuss all the downsides of conventional therapy, I think it's impossible to ignore the toll of medications that are given for back pain. We can start with, you know, ordinary over-the-counter medications. Recently, it was shown that Tylenol doesn't really work for back pain. It's virtually useless. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs work to a small extent, but they increase the risk for heart attacks within a short period of time, within 7 days, by 50%. Most of the over-the-counters like Aleve and Motrin, ibuprofen, these medications may increase the risk for cardiac events. And then, of course, there's the terrible toll of people who are hooked on pain meds, opiates. We now have a soaring problem with disability in this country. We have an increasing number of depressed, suicidal, marginalized individuals who are hooked on drugs. And it's often a consequence of back pain.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, it's very, very interesting and very sad to watch this whole situation evolve over the period that I wrote the book, researched and wrote the book, because I really effectively began this work in 2010. And in 2010, nobody was really talking about opioids as being a problem for in a prescribed situation. No one was discussing that. And we were talking about, you know, street corner sales of opioids, of OxyContin and oxycodone. We were talking about really a sort of
hillbilly heroin, you know, that kind of
hillbilly heroin, dissolute situation. No one was talking about this except for one man, and his name is Michael von Korff, and he is a pain medicine scientist, works in public health, and he said to me, this is going to be quite a big problem. He said, you know, people make the assumption that these drugs work, not necessarily, and the side effects are terrible, and just watch what's going to happen. And you know, I checked in with a few other surgeons, and they're like, no, you know, we know that there's no ceiling dose and they're not addictive. And we know because drug companies have told us that it's perfectly safe. Then I ran into a guy named Andrew Kolodny, who, since we met, has become quite an important figure in really helping to talk about the opioid public health crisis. And at that time, he was at Phoenix House, and which is, of course, a facility for the treatment of addiction. And he said, this is going to be the worst thing you have ever seen in this country, and it is driven by opioid prescriptions. Do not fool yourself. It is not driven by some street corner sales. And I was still skeptical, but I spent a lot of time with Dr. Kolodny, and over several years, he proved to be absolutely right. And I think the chapter that probably took me the longest to write was the chapter called The Opioid Wars, because tracing the development of this problem past, you know, Appalachia, is very complex, to watch how the Sackler brothers, who started Purdue Pharma, created a situation where a drug that we have always known to be very dangerous, the Greeks knew it was dangerous, the ancient Greeks, everyone has always known it was addictive. Everyone has known it was dangerous. It was illegal to prescribe in the United States for decades. And Andrew Kolodny showed me, he helped to walk me through how it happened that the pharmaceutical companies, not a lot of pharmaceutical companies, but some very big ones, managed to convince American medicine that these drugs were in fact very safe, efficacious, and should be used, to the point that the business grew to hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars very, very quickly.
With very aggressive marketing and bonuses for salespeople and incentives to hospitals and doctors and medical practices to continue prescribing in a way that ultimately has resulted in colossal penalties for Purdue.
Yes, it has. And yet the penalties for Purdue are nowhere near colossal enough, given the sales that they continue to make. And what we need to look at very closely is the fact that the FDA has continued to push through new extended-release opioids that have some benefits. Perhaps they're a little bit harder to snort or inject, but addicts have a really remarkable way of finding a way around that. Yep. And so they're not as quote unquote safe as people would like, as the pharmaceutical companies would certainly like you to think. I mean, American adults spend $18 billion a year on drugs that are intended to treat non-cancer chronic pain. $18 billion. It's unbelievable, right?
And there are perverse incentives to get people on disability. And I think part of the responsibility lies with the legal profession, which is virtually an industry, to obtain disability payments for people, which is, you know, we call this a perverse incentive away from wellness towards, it's like a reward system for being debilitated and addicted to pain medication.
Well, and for being sliced and diced also.
And undergoing treatments too, because that's part of that's the gaming of the system, is that, you know, part of the role that the patient plays is to willingly go like a sheep to slaughter, to undergo multiple procedures.
That's right. I mean, I was talking to a man the other day who told me that you just absolutely have to agree. When your lawyer says you need to see this doctor and this doctor and this doctor, you go, because otherwise you think you don't have a case. That's the only way you're going to have a case. Your lawyer has informed you. And you go, and then these physicians, who are sometimes they're chiropractors, they're basically, they're in cahoots with each other. Mm-hmm. The attorneys see sometimes the work comp insurers. Many smaller hospitals that would not have a way of making a buck if they were not in cahoots with the whole disability cartel.
They rely on referrals. They rely on referrals.
They do. Yeah, yeah. And in the book, we have several stories that, you know, if I hadn't researched it myself, I would not believe what goes on in terms of recruiting workers out of the strawberry and lettuce fields in California, shipping them off to very small hospitals where they are doing hundreds and hundreds of spinal fusion surgeries, occasionally billing and claiming that instrumentation was put into a spine when there was no instrumentation. It even gets worse than that. I mean, in one case where it's just so horrible that you can't even believe it, this one company felt that they really weren't making enough money doing what I just described. So they arranged with a local tool and die maker who typically made machine parts to make the surgical instrumentation, such as the screws, the pedicle screws, and the various clips. And he was making them on his, you know, machines that were in no way calibrated for that, out of materials that were definitely not titanium. And he was an older gentleman, and I think he was absolutely snowed into this scheme. But I mean, it's worth, as a push for my own book, it's worth buying the book read that single story.
No, I have to say that there's so many stories of rogue surgeons. I mean, surgeons who perform hundreds and hundreds of completely unnecessary operations, bilking Medicare for millions of dollars. And you enumerate
and damaging patients horribly while they're doing it.
Absolutely. And creating a terrible toll of broken lives. Okay, it's so far a lot of bad news, but the book ends on a hopeful note. And the time is too short to go into your very detailed discussion of some of the positive options for patients with back pain.
Should say that the whole second half of the book, the first half of the book is called Problems, and the second half is Solutions. So it is a very solutions-oriented book, by the way. There's just too much juicy stuff around the first half, frankly. But the second half of the book really looks at what you can do, what often works for people, why it works, like what are your goals, and how do you find yourself and get yourself into the right hands. We talk about back whisperers and posture mavens, because one of the things that people fail to understand is, you know, your parents say to you, stand up straight, sit up straight, don't slump like that. Well, unless you have the musculature to support that, that's about a 10-second intervention. You can sit up straight, and the next thing you know, you're going to be a mess again. And posture is really going way downhill in this country for reasons I describe in the book. So those two chapters look at how do you find someone who can help you get a grip on your own body, balance out the musculature so that you're not careening over in one direction or another, get strong enough so you can actually support your own frame. And that was the procedure I had to go through. I was always a tall, thin woman, and then, you know, I kind of liked being tall and thin. But what I came to realize was I just didn't have enough structure to support my own mm-hmm. Skeleton.
Yep.
And it had to change, and it has, you know, and I am much more athletic looking now than I was when I started this book. And people mention that quite frequently.
And the net result is a great book that should offer help to a lot of people to avoid pitfalls, of which there are many, and to embrace some of the great solutions that are out there. I want to thank you very much for joining us. And so what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? The book, obviously, I recommend it highly to the vast majority of you out there who suffer at one point or another from back pain. It's a great resource. Is there a website as well?
Yes, there is. To make it simple, I've shortened my name. So it's www.cjramin.com. And on the website, there is a very hefty resource section so that you'd be able to input your state or your question or your problem, and you will get a nice amount of information that will help you move forward in your quest. There's also a way there to contact me. I can't answer everything right away, but I really do try. I'm also very active on social media, and I think it would be great if everybody went right ahead and liked the Facebook page called Crooked: The Back Book. So Crooked and then a colon, The Back Book. We've got a lot of action there. I post important stories every day, and I will continue to do so. And I love to get your input on what you see there.
Well, great. And thank you so much for being a back crusader. And much luck as you launch the book. I see you're off on a tour throughout California, Berkeley, Mill Valley, San Francisco, Calistoga, California. We have some listeners out there, so check the schedule at cjramin.com for dates where you can attend some of her talks, full discussion.
That's right. And also, if you happen to have an organization that you feel would enjoy having me speak, I am available for that as well through my speakers bureau. And would love to come and see you.
Well, great job. And thank you for being so generous with your time today with our listeners. Very much appreciated. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Catherine Jacobson Raymond. The book is Crooked: Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.